supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Voices in the Family is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. Hey, Happy New Year, my friends. I'm sure many of you have made your New Year's resolutions by now. I'd like to offer a thoughtful, professional recommendation about your New Year's resolutions. Forget about it. You're not going to keep them. Odds are you're going to fail, and then you're going to feel bad about yourself. You're going to beat yourself up. You'll have a self-esteem problem. Forget about it. Okay, so now what? Well, let me tell you a story. I've got a buddy who's got a flowering plant, and he was saying this plant flowers all year long, and like a month ago, it just stopped flowering. So he called his mother, who is an expert with plants, and she said, well, of course it stopped flowering. It's supposed to this time of year. It doesn't grow up. This is the time of year that plants grow down, that their roots grow more deeply. And, you know, it's the shortest time of the year for us. It's the darkest time. It's the time for us to allow our roots to grow more deeply. And that's what today's show is about. It's about reconnecting with our roots, remembering who we are and what our lives are about, and perhaps even trying to live our lives more closely aligned with our deepest values. Joining me to talk about this are Nancy Fuchs Kramer. She's the director of the Department of Multi-Faith Studies and Initiatives at the Reconstructionist Rabbinical College, where she's an associate professor of religious studies. Hi, Nance. Welcome. Hi. To the show. I'm also joined by the Reverend Charles Howard. Chaz is the chaplain at the University of Pennsylvania. Chaz, welcome.
Honored to be with you, sir.
And an old friend, Sylvia Borstein. Sylvia is a psychologist, an author, and founding teacher of Spirit Rock Meditation Center in Woodacre, California, where she teaches mindfulness meditation. Hi, Sylvia. Welcome back.
Hi, Dan. It's nice to be with you again.
And we would love to hear from you, our listeners, your thoughts, your reflections, questions about how to do that. Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, 888-477-9499. Nancy, this process of turning inward gets ritualized in Judaism around the high holidays. The Jewish New Year's is a couple of months ago. So what's the purpose of it, of looking in, of reconnecting with ourselves? What's the purpose? And just as important, what's the process?
I always think I'm lucky as a Jew because I have two chances every 12 months to end and begin again. I have the Jewish New Year, as you point out, in the fall, and this Gregorian New Year on January 1st. And I think there is a lot to be learned from the way we Jews do it in September. One of the things I think is really important that I take from the experience of going through the high holidays is that getting ready to change is not a one-day thing. It's a process. It is, just like you said, a process, a spiritual journey, if you will. Traditional Jews started a month before Rosh Hashanah. It's a whole month of making amends with people, getting you have to kind of end the last year before you begin the new one, which is something I think we kind of forget about in our culture.
How do we do that?
In the Jewish tradition, there you visit the graves of your ancestors. Mm. One of the things you do. One of the things you do is make an accounting of your soul. Hebrew, it's called Cheshbon HaNefesh. You think about the year that's gone past. And you actually meet with people in your life and talk to them and apologize and ask their forgiveness. All of that is just a lead up to the actual days that we sit in synagogue and think about moving forward. In other words, there's a process of completion, of celebration of what we've done in that year that's passed, and then a process of letting go of that year, all of which I think is necessary to move forward.
I'm sure, Sylvia, that fits with your thinking and values about letting go of the year past so we can engage with the year coming.
Well, both letting go of the year past and marking this as a new time, as Nancy said, you know, we have these ritualized new times. I was going to add a third one to the two new years. Often people think of their birthday as a time for a new time. Mm-hmm. But wherever there's a landmark time, it's like a wake-up bell that says, bing, okay, not how am I doing, but I think of myself very much about where am I going? I read a really wonderful new book about Zen practice recently, written by a man in the idiom of driving a taxi, because he's a taxi driver and now an author. But he begins his book by saying, what I say to everybody when they get into my cab is, where would you like to go? And he says, that fundamentally is the really important question in life. Where do I want to go? Not externally to the mall or wherever, but internally. Where is my heart set on going? And in the sense of, I'd like to be the kind of person who used every moment of my life in a way that didn't miss the fact that my life is passing.
I want to stop you right there because you used a phrase that I think is terribly important. You said, where do you want to go? But then you said, where does my heart want to go? That's very different from the brain or the ego. This is what the heart wants to do is very different from setting, you know, personal goals about accomplishing a variety of things, yes?
I think so. Because what I think about is, just as you asked Nancy, what are the practices that one might do? I think to myself that, as you know, what I teach principally is mindful reflection, mindfulness, meditation, really paying attention. And often we suggest to people that they have a certain amount of contemplative time in their life. It doesn't have to be the whole of the life, but that we think of times in our lives where we stop doing and spend some time just being and being present in this moment. And one of the things that I've become absolutely trusting of over the years is that if I stop and sit quietly or take a quiet walk or look out of the window quietly, that my own mind will do that kind of cheshbon ha-nefesh that Nancy talked about, that checking of a moral inventory is what I'd call it. And it does it not because, as you said, that we should feel bad about breaking resolutions, but because keeping resolutions is what makes us happy. And I'm very happy to have a mind that does its own moral inventory so that I can reorient how I am, so that I can be my most connecting, my most available self, because in the end, that's where I want to go, and that's what makes me happiest.
I'm going to turn to you, Chaz. You know, we talked about kind of being led by the voice of our heart or listening to the voice of our heart. Others might call it the voice of God or our internal moral compass. That's easy to say. It's easy to talk about and easy to agree with. It's much harder to do.
Absolutely.
So what advice do you have?
When I was in my 20s, I used to work in a bookstore and I stumbled on the writings of a woman named Teresa of Avila. She's a 16th century saint from Spain. And she has a quote that's been crucial for me in making decisions and in moving through life. She says, do whatever most kindles love in you. Mm. And to me, that is an interesting starting point. I mean, I love the dichotomy you have there of where would you like to go and where does my heart want to go? And it's something that I wrestle and journey with my students on campus around, of challenge them to do whatever most kindles love in them, do what their passions are, do what their heart, do what draws them, as opposed to doing the safe choice.
You know, and as opposed to doing what feels good.
Yes, yes. And like you said, it's easier said than done. And it's easy to do while you're still in school. It's harder to do when you're getting ready to accept a job offer or go to grad school or launch.
Hmm. That was Reverend Chaz Howard, a chaplain at University of Pennsylvania. We're also talking with Nancy Fuchs Kramer. She's a rabbi at the Reconstructionist Rabbinical College. On the phone is Sylvia Borstein, who teaches mindfulness meditation at Spirit Rock Meditation Center in California. We're talking about finding our roots, listening to that voice inside. And we'd like to hear from you. Our number is 888-477-9499. If you're having trouble hearing it, we'd like to hear from you. If you don't hear it at all, or if you don't have the time or sense of entitlement to listen to it, 888-477-9499. Chaz, I want to come back to you. Last month, Inquirer columnist Monica Yankenny wrote a article featuring you and your philosophy about New Year's resolutions. They were about caring for others. I mean, as I thought about it, most of our New Year's resolutions are about me, 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 you know? So where did this idea come from?
Doc, two friends of mine, named Len Maddy and Nathan Jones, we sort of sat through the summer and were trying to think of ways to challenge people to make commitments to serving others in their lives. And, you know, one of the most interesting moments in life are these new years, be it Rosh Hashanah or a birthday or sort of the Greco-Roman calendar, the new year. As we thought about the concept of resolutions and how people they resolve to start something, and like you said, most of the resolutions are around losing weight or saving money. And so what we wanted to do over the holiday season is to challenge people to look within themselves at their own gifts, their own passions, and think about ways that they can apply those to serving others. And so one guy who made a resolution this year was a guy named Justin Riley. He's a poet. And he was thinking about ways he could serve others. And he was thinking about mentoring or being a big brother, big sister. But in conversations with him, he felt like, I want to draw on my own passion. So what he's going to do this year is he's writing a poem every single week about various different types of causes and issues out there and putting good out in the world that way. Which is exciting to me, to sort of see someone look inward and then serve and move outward from there. So that's sort of the thought behind Resolution 11.
So, Nancy, you and I were talking about your website before we went on the air, resolution11.org. Tell us about it.
It's been a miracle. It really was just a dream of a few friends. And, you know, 2 or 3 months later, we've had literally resolutions coming from around the world, whether it's, again, people committing to tutor after school, or we had a journalist in New York who's going to be blogging every week about various causes, and she and her husband are going to give $52 a week to a different charity and try to get others to do it. Different people have resolved to work with elders, to work with foster kids, to raise funds in various ways. People are planning 5K runs for the homeless. It's been moving and inspiring to kind of see what people are resolving to do.
Well, but I have a question that, you know, Sylvia said that keeping resolutions make us happy, but they're tough to keep. I mean, you know, and you know, one of my teachers many years ago said all promises were lies. So how do we do that? How do we make a commitment, even if it's for others, and how do we keep it?
I think it's one of the great challenges of life in general, be it a marriage or a friendship. How do you keep these commitments? And I think, to me, the best hope is love. You know, I think if one is doing mentoring or tutoring just to sort of pad a resume or to get into college, for example, it's doomed. But if one is going to a school to mentor because of love, because they love those kids, if one is sort of starting a homeless shelter out of love for the poor, that thing will endure.
Yeah, yeah.
If one's getting married out of convenience sake, it's not great. If one is getting married out of love, it has a much better shot.
I think that's wonderful. Nancy, I'm going to come back to you. Part of the calling of Judaism, and a key calling, is to heal the world. But, you know, it seems to me that as the world injures us or stresses us, and I think about the economy, that as that gets worse, we get more selfish, self-absorbed, and, you know, from an evolutionary perspective, that's adaptive. So how do we look outward when we're suffering inward?
I have a lot of thoughts related to your question, and they really relate back to the website that you started, Chaz. When I read that website, what struck me was that we were reading these resolutions, these plans for action, but what the person wanted to do was just the tip of a much bigger story, which was, who did this person think they were in the world, and what did they think the world was all about, and what was the story they thought they were telling with their lives, and what was the bigger story? I call it the backstory. And so for me, it seems like the bigger, the sacred narratives in which we live our lives explain why we want to do what we do. And one of the things that happens on the Jewish New Year is we get together with other Jews and we retell our stories and we remind ourselves what the bigger picture is all about.
Give us an example of an individual story and a bigger story.
You just said before about why. How do we know when we're hurting that we still need to turn outward when we're having the troubles in our own lives? What reminds us that we are grateful, that we do have the blessings we have, that we still owe to give back, that we want to be there for others? I think that the putting yourself in the community of other Jews and hearing, again, these long and very powerful recitals of how our ancestors for generations and centuries looked at their own lives and thought about what they owed others, I think that it makes it much more real than it is true that each one of us, you know, feels a certain amount of obligation to the rest of the world. But it's not just that. It's not, you're not just there all by yourself trying to do that. It's part of a much longer and bigger story of people who say, I was born into this life owing back already, that I've been given the gift of life, I've been given the chance to be here on this earth another year. I guess for me, the biggest part has to do with death and life, that you get there on the high holidays and they're talking to you about who shall live and who shall die and who isn't here, who was here last year, who might not be here next year. And all of a sudden you get it. This isn't about death at all. This is about the fact that you are still here. And darn it, you, for now, you still have a chance to do something with your life.
Yeah, you know, we're talking about waking up to our lives, and I'm going to turn to you, Sylvia, that I find myself more awake, more aware. I'm thinking of a yoga who once said, every time you walk through a door, wake up. And I find myself more awake the closer I am to my death, the closer I feel to my death. And the closer I feel to my death, the more alive I feel, the more I can cherish my life. What is it, Sylvia, about this issue of life and death that wakes us up?
Well, you know, what comes to mind as you say that, Dan, because I believe that completely, that as I get older, the Buddha said that we practice because we have to have an awareness of old age, sickness, and death, that this life is a finite amount, and we have a little bit of time, and that keeps us awake. What are we going to do with that time? And the story that came to my mind as you were posing the question to me is about a neighbor I have my neighbor Jesse, a little while back, some years back, who was a physician, and he died of colon cancer, and he died at home, and I visited him in the last days of his life, And he was in considerable discomfort. He was in his bed. He was surrounded by bottles of medicines. He had, he showed me, he said, you know, these are morphine, so I can control my own pain. But he was a physician. He knew how to do that. And he said, you know, sometimes the pain is so terrible that I think about, I know how to give myself an overdose, and I could be finished with the pain because I know I'm going to be gone very shortly. He said, but every time I think to myself, you know, I could do it right now, I'm in too much pain. He said, I think about my nephew in Los Angeles who's about to start a business, and I have some business ideas for him that might help him out, so I call him up on the telephone. And then another time that I think about doing it, I think about my brother's son, other son, who lives in Georgia, who's about to get married. You know, I've been married a long time, and I know what some of the things I wish I'd known when I first got married. And so I call him up to talk about that, and I literally thought to myself, Jesse is living as long as he's living. He is living till the last moment of his life, and he is living by connecting himself in warm concern with the other people that populate his heart. And I thought to myself at that story as you were asking, because I thought earlier on as Chaz was talking about his wonderful website, I think that's a great idea. I wrote down a bunch of things that I thought I'll tell people about. Those are great ideas. And you asked the question, why do we keep doing it? Why do we keep doing those things? And I think we keep up because, as you said, it's a self-fulfilling occupation, because it's so pleasant to be other-absorbed instead of having the pain of self-preoccupation. It's endless, the pain of self-preoccupation. And to be able to have people out there in our family, in our group, in our world, with whom we can connect with bonds of love is a way, I think, I used to think of it quite literally as a kind of a lifeboat keeping my heart afloat in these difficult days.
Well, and
before the final moment.
Well, you know, the suffering of self-absorption is endless, and, you know, the joys of love are endless, too. Love begets love. Let's go to the phones before we take a break. We've got Catherine on the line. Catherine, hi, you're on the air. Catherine? No, I guess we don't have her anymore. Well, let's take a short break for 1 minute. We'll come back, and I want to talk about something Chaz talks about a great deal, and that's the authentic self. What is it? How do we all view it? And what do we do about it? How do we find our own authenticity and live accordingly? That's what we're talking about. What this new year means, what it can mean in terms of our lives, our ability to reflect, to rediscover who we are, and maybe make that discovery with compassion, even love. My guests are Nancy Fuchs Kramer. She is the director of the Department of Multi-Faith Studies at the Reconstructionist Rabbinical College. And Reverend Charles Howard, he's chaplain at the University of Pennsylvania. Sylvia Borstein is a founding teacher at Spirit Rock Meditation Center in Woodacre, California. We'd love to hear from you. Our number is 888-477-9499. How do you listen to that voice inside, and what do you do about it? Do you have a ritual, a structure? 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY-FM.
The Chester County Hospital supports WHYY and is committed to making lives better every day. They've developed a partnership with the University of Pennsylvania for Cancer Treatment, Radiology, and Radiation Oncology. Details at chestercountyhospital.org.
On the next Fresh Air, Alan Shawn, author of the new memoir Twin, about how it's affected his life to have a twin sister who's autistic and was institutionalized at the age of 8. The book is also about growing up in an unusual family. He's the son of William Shawn, the former editor of The New Yorker. Also, your digital afterlife. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
WHYY programming is supported by the teachers and education support professionals of the Pennsylvania State Education Association, educating all children for a bright future. We are PSEA, providing the power of a great education.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, and we are talking about reconnecting on this New Year's, remembering who we are at core, remembering what we may have forgotten many, many years ago, often in childhood. My guests are Reverend Chaz Howard. He's a chaplain at University of Pennsylvania. Nancy Fuchs Kramer. She is with the Reconstructionist Rabbinical College. She's an associate professor of religious studies there. And Sylvia Borstein, a psychologist, founding teacher of Spirit Rock Meditation Center in Woodacre, California. Our number is 888-477-9499. Chaz, I talked about this business of the authentic self before the break. You've got two daughters. Ages 4 and 6. Mm-hmm. And when we spoke to you earlier, you said you saw a difference already between those two.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of their openness, their authenticity, for lack of a better word.
That's one of the joys of parenting, is sort of seeing the personalities within a child develop. And I think one of the griefs of raising children, though, is seeing when they put on fake selves for friends, for as they get older, for college, for jobs and stuff like that. So I think that's one of the things that we try to challenge our kids to be who they really are and to not be something or someone who they aren't.
Well, let me challenge you that when they put on that mask, maybe that's part of who they are. You know, when you told your story, and I read, you spoke with our producer, Jennifer Lynn, and she, you know, told me about that story. And I thought, when you talked about your 6-year-old being, you know, kind of fitting in with the others, I thought of Adam and Eve and the fig leaf.
Mm.
You know, and that's kind of a natural process. And in terms of development, that's about where Adam and Eve were.
Sure.
You know, it's around 5 or 6, not according to the story, but, you know, where you discover, oh my goodness, I have private parts that I don't want exposed.
Yeah. And I think that that's part of the natural process we all need to go through, is that that awareness of self and not always being comfortable with everyone seeing that. There's a book, one of my favorite authors is a woman named Susan Howatch, and she wrote a series of books, and the first was called Glittering Images. And her point in the novel is sort of discussing the tendency we have as humans to project kind of an illusion to others in an effort to hide our true selves. And it's normal, and we all do it, but I think it's also not the best way to live, because when you hide your true self, you don't allow your true self to be loved. You don't allow your true self to be known. And there's something sad when people love the false you, or at least only part of you, and can't love the full you. There's a song by a guy named Chris Tomlin called Indescribable. And in it, he talks about God seeing the depths of our hearts, but loving us the same. And to me, that's one of the challenges of humanity, of one, being able to love each other, blemishes, shortcomings, insecurities and all. And also the other challenges is allowing oneself to be loved too, allowing oneself to be seen, but still be loved too.
Well, my mantra is you can't be loved until you're seen. You can't trust it until you're seen. It's never real, and being seen is even more important than being loved. Nancy, what's your take on the authentic self?
Dan, I can't help but tell you the midrash about the putting the fig leaves on, because after that, God comes and he says to Adam, "Where are you?"
Mm.
And the question comes up, why does God not know where Adam is? Didn't God just create the whole universe? There are only two people. How has he misplaced one of them already?
Preach.
And the answer, of course, is one of my very favorite Yom Kippur stories. God's not asking Adam, "Where are you?" for information for God. He's asking Adam, "Where are you?" Where are you in your life? That's the story. That's the question.
Let's go to the phones. We've got Erica on the line. Hi, Erica.
Hello there.
Hi there.
Hi. Well, I wanted to remark, I'm an older woman, I'm 73, and I wanted to remark about a poetic way of stating some of the things you're talking about psychologically, and that is the poet Wallace Stevens wrote, and it stayed with me since my youth, that death is the mother of beauty. And this thought, death is the mother of beauty, strikes me to the heart, because as life becomes more and more precious, the more beautiful it becomes. And so it's a poetic way of expressing some of the psychological things you're talking about. You see, I'm a writer, so that's how I get to that. Anyway, I just wanted to share that with you.
So you, Erica, if can we talk about Erica for just a minute?
All right.
I mean, you called, you have to take your risks, you know.
Yes, I understand that.
Okay. So you described yourself first as an older woman.
Yes.
So as you age, does your life get more beautiful?
It gets more beautiful and more excruciating simultaneously, because I have to face realities which I don't want to face. My failing body, my lack of finances. Now, I also am not that badly off. I don't mean to say that, but I am aware of my mortality. And I also wouldn't want to change to any other time in my life, because I just feel that I'm so in touch with the universe that it's a beautiful time to exist. I just want to keep learning and feeling and paring down for my life the things that don't matter that much anymore. And it's hard. It's hard because they're old habits. No.
Well, yeah, I'm sure Sylvia has a comment or two on that about paring down and old habits. Erica, thanks so much for your call, and I do wish you the best. I wish you great joy.
And me too. Thank you.
Thanks, Erica.
Bye-bye.
So, Sylvia.
Yes.
The Great Suffering is about old habits, and changing old habits is what Erica implied.
I love that line. I wrote it down as she said it, because I thought, well, if I talk next, I'm going to talk about changing habits.
Well, there you go.
Maybe the imperative as one grows older, because I am 74 years old, and my sense of urgency is what I see as fired up in these days, both because I've come along in the years that I'll have, and also because I see that the crucial thing for me is changing those habits of mind. It's always been, but I recognize it now more than ever, that what I can change is not the I take good care of my body, but it's inexorably going to change and get older and have more difficulties. But I can change the habits of my mind, from those that confuse me and upset me and cause me to suffer, to those that support me and keep me really alive and vital, which are the habits of loving, the habits of accepting.
How do we do that?
Well, my experience from contemplative practice is that when I pay attention to my mind, and when I'm able to both help it to relax and see clearly the truth of its experience, So the truth of my experience, so that I choose well, and I see this is what's going on, this is my reality. I think for all of us, however old we are, when we see this is my reality and these are the options that I have, we choose wisely. I think human beings do that. We choose on behalf of ourselves and also on behalf of others. That we really, when you said before, what is our authentic mind, I think to myself, I have a great faith through contemplative practice that my mind, our minds, I think, I can extrapolate to, when I'm not confused, I am kind, I'm tolerant, I'm forgiving, I am all the attributes that I think we think of as the virtues of the heart in whatever spiritual tradition that we'd like to have, that not only are nice additions into the world, but they're what make for a contented and a happy mind. When I'm confused, they're not there.
You started by saying being aware of my experience, but you know, I sit in my office often and I hear people say, well, my experience of my life is that my husband doesn't listen to me and my kids are out of control, and you know, my experience is that my life is suffering. And is that what you mean, Sylvia, by listening to the truth of your experience, or are you talking about something else?
No, I think that's part of it. It's certainly part of it. It's not only what is happening in my life, but how I feel about what's happening and how I am responding to how I feel. Am I therefore angry at my life? Am I angry at myself for having made these decisions and having this family and these children and this husband, and I should have done other, and I should have gotten other, and I should have fixed it earlier? Am I in contention with my experience? Or am I able to say, okay, this is what's going on. This is what I can do. This is what I can't do. This is what I will do. And now I need to take be with what I can't change.
That's the operational phrase. Am I in contention with my experience? Am I in contention with my life? Am I in contention with this moment? I mean, that's the difference between whether we suffer when we're in a traffic jam or whether we're just in a traffic jam. Chaz, I want to turn to you and change gears just a little bit. You gave a lecture to Penn students that was, I think it was on YouTube. I think I saw it on YouTube. It was wonderful, where you used dance as as a metaphor to help them get into their lives and not sit back. At the end of the lecture, you said before that before they danced, they had to know what their song was.
Mm. It's hard to hear the music sometimes.
Yeah, so how do we find our song?
You know, it literally, to beat the metaphor into the ground, I think it's one sort of pays attention to what makes them bop a little bit, what makes their foot tap. And not every type of music makes me dance, you know? I grew up in Baltimore, and there's a sort of distinct Baltimore hip-hop club sound. And without fail, I can't help but sort of shake a little bit every time I hear that. I think sort of, you know, vocationally, it's important to pay attention to what makes you shake, too. You know, too many, so my students, but really in general in life, a lot of us move to music that's not meant for us. And going back to sort of earlier, doing, you know, following what our heart is calling us to do, it's easy to dance to music that is safe, that promises wealth, that promises security, that promises sort of job, career advancement. It's harder to dance to music that really grabs our heart. You know, so I see the student every year who wrestles with, you know, my parents want me to go into the medical profession, but I really want to do Teach for America. And I understand parental pressures are real, but you also got to follow your heart, whether it's occupationally or whether it's in just your side life, your community service too, as well.
Mm. This business of following your heart, Nancy, involves some risk taking here. It involves, you know, come back to the Bible. You know, when God says to Adam, you know, leave your father's house. I mean, the words I was told imply leave what is familiar. That's how the journey begins. Leave what's familiar. Requires a good deal of courage, faith, if you will.
Absolutely. And you began by saying, this show by saying, resolutions often get broken. I want to say that all this conversation is leaving me feeling, including you, Sylvia, you're talking about these beautiful ideas about not wrestling with your life and, you know, accepting where you are. And I'm wondering, though, Let's get specific. Let's get down to, you're talking about faith. I'm talking about how do you bring it in every single day in practices that recur so that you can actually feel and see it.
From the bottom of my heart, I want to thank you for setting us up perfectly to take a break and telling our listeners that's exactly what we're going to do when we come back from a break. So thank you. We are talking about finding ourselves, finding who we are, and leading our lives according to that, making the world better, probably by making ourselves more comfortable with who we are. My guests are Sylvia Boorstein. She's a psychologist and author, founding teacher at Spirit Rock Meditation Center in California. Reverend Chaz Howard is a chaplain at University of Pennsylvania. Nancy Fuchs Kramer is associate professor of religious studies at the Reconstructionist Rabbinical College. We've got a couple of lines open. Our number is 888-477-9499. We'd love to hear from you about the voice of your heart. How do you find it? What do you do? What are the rituals you engage in? 888-477-9499. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY-FM.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. Yannick Nezet-Sagun conducts the Philadelphia Orchestra and the Philadelphia Singers' Chorale in Mozart's Immortal Requiem, a work the Philadelphia Orchestra has not performed in 20 years. Tickets at 215-893-1999. Three performances have sold out. Tickets available for the fourth performance on Sunday afternoon. Mozart's Requiem with Yannick Nezet-Sagun and the Philadelphia Orchestra at the Kimmel Center.
Peace was their sign, Woodstock was their musical mecca, and Jimi Hendrix provided their anthem. After revolutionizing music, culture, and politics, the baby boomers have reached another historic moment. The first wave of that generation is turning 65. What that means for their future and the future of the country. Next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We are talking with Sylvia Boorstein, author, founding teacher of Spirit Rock Meditation Center. We're talking with Reverend Chaz Howard, the chaplain at University of Pennsylvania, and Nancy Fuchs Kramer, associate professor of religious studies at the Reconstructionist Rabbinic College, about who we are, reconnecting with ourselves at the very deepest level. We've got a lot of people on the phone, and we promised you and Nancy that we're going to get to concretes. So let's get to the phones first. We've got Ramona on the line. Ramona, hi. You're on the air.
Hello there.
Hi there.
I'm Ramona in Philadelphia. I was listening, and as you speak about what really helps us or transforms us, I'm a hypnotherapist for many years, and one of the things I learned, which really helped a lot, is that you cannot get rid of a habit. You can only replace it with a new habit. And a good example for me would be to share with people, when I was young, I was a dance instructor at Arthur Murray's, and I hated the waltz. And we had an instructor for all the teachers to teach us the fabulous steps. And I would ask him for tango. He teach me my tango. And he would say to me, you have to practice your waltz. When it gets better, I teach you a new step. So he piecemealed me into learning it. And now, since that time, I love the waltz way better than tango. I learned to love it and find the beauty in it, which is part of what we're talking about. How do we find it? And sometimes it doesn't feel like a calling, but it's part of some other calling, and it becomes the real calling.
I think that is exactly what we're talking about, and I think I'm going to take your comment and turn to Sylvia Boorstein about that. And Sylvia, and thanks for the call, Ramon. I appreciate that, and I'm happy you're enjoying the walls. Sylvia, You've talked about contemplative practice. Tell us what that is concretely and what it does.
I want specifically to include in contemplative practice the insights from paying attention, which is what I think of as contemplative practice. Doesn't mean it being necessarily sitting down with your eyes closed, but really paying attention deeply to each moment of experience, and picking up what Nancy said as well about how do we turn it into something concrete in our lives. And I think for myself, when I pay attention to whatever is my experience, the response to it is not complacency. It's acceptance, but not complacency. It's non-contention, but warm and helpful response, whether it's to situations in my mind or situations in the world. And I think with the response I'd like to have to your question about how do we do this in our lives is people who practice within a Buddhist lineage often take what are called precepts, Buddhist precepts, but they're actually people precepts. There are five, one might say, and I'll tell you that you say at the end of these five sentences, you say, may these precepts be the cause for happiness, because they're seen not as tiresome obligations, but actually the cause of happiness. You say, I vow to not harm any living being. I vow to never take anything that isn't freely given to me. I vow to express my speech and my sexuality in ways that are kind and neither exploitive or abusive. And the fifth is I vow to keep my mind clear, non-intoxicated by whatever intoxicates it, so that I can fulfill those precepts. May these precepts be the cause for happiness. And in a concrete way, there are people I know who have written those precepts out, of course they know them by heart, and put them on their bathroom mirror so that while they're brushing their teeth in the morning or shaving or doing whatever they do in front of the mirror, they either out loud or in their minds set themselves up for the day aligned with those precepts. Again, not feeling impelled by anything but their own heart, by knowing that this will put them in the direction that they intend to go.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Jeannie on the line. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi. I've been listening and taking it all in, and I feel as if it sounds all good, but I often find that it's very difficult to keep the voice alive, your heart's desire, specifically as you age. What happened and what used to work to make my heart sing doesn't make my heart sing anymore. And so finding that new voice, that new heart sing, it's very difficult when you're balancing family, obligations, the bills, and still being very true to yourself. I'm finding it difficult to achieve that balance.
I wish you were here in the studio. You would see Nancy Fuchs Kramer kind of chomping at the bit with your question. You're free, Nancy.
Thank you. So one thing I think that we do know about human beings is that we can't do it by ourselves. Certainly that's an insight that comes from Judaism. I look every Yom Kippur, why do all these people show up here? Some of them only go to synagogue once a year. They're compelled to come because they're thinking about things that they know they can't think about by themselves. They think about better with others. And we know that Weight Watchers works, that going to 12-step programs work. And we know that it makes sense to turn to other people and to groups. And Sylvia was a teacher of mine in meditation, and people go to groups to meditate together. They're not even talking to each other, but they're in the room together, and something incredibly powerful happens. So that's one particular thing I would say. The other thing I would say is just the regularity of a commitment, the very specific nature of saying not only I will be mindful of this, that, or the other thing in a very general way, but to say every day at 5 o'clock I'm going to sit and do that introspection, that meditation, that moment of mindfulness. I find that that's very important specificity, the practices we take on. the recurring nature of them is what leads us to feel we really can make these things happen. We all know this. We all know it's easier if we say, I'm going to go to the gym 3 times a week and my buddy's going to go with me.
Chaz, I would also think that, you know, if Jeannie could sit down for 5 minutes, as Nancy suggested, every day or 10 minutes, whatever it is, and listen to the voice of her heart, that doesn't mean she has to march in lockstep to the calling of her heart. We're not trying to cultivate narcissism here on the show, but she needs to listen to the voice of her heart and maybe listen to the voice of her life.
Absolutely. And I think connect that heart song with a need in the world too, which I think is an essential essential thing. So I'm reading currently a book that I'm late to the game on called The Gift by Lewis Hyde. And he talks about early on sort of the what makes a man or a woman of substance. He talks about sort of recently in the world, the people of substance are those who are wealthy, those who are powerful, those who have titles and such. But he tries to get us back to a time where the people of substances were the people who did the most in the world, who put out the most, who served the most. I think that's essential. If we can connect our heart song with a need out there, I think it has a much greater chance of coming to life.
Well, I'm also thinking, you know, I'm a child of the 60s, and the details are not going to be talked about, but you know, the song, you know, if you're not with the one you love, love the one you're with. And I'm thinking of, you know, 12 steps have come up here in today's show several times. And, you know, when Nancy talked about the holidays, that's step number 4 about making amends. And the phrase in AA is fake it till you make it. Mm. So, and it works. It works from what we're learning about, you know, brain anatomy and neurobiology. You do it. You put love. You act generously. You find things to be grateful for, and your brain actually changes. That's why I said that, you know, love begets love. And unfortunately, I just realized that was a closing sermon. So. We got to go. Thanks so much to all three of you. It's been great. Sylvia, it's good being with you again. Take care of yourself.
You too, Dan.
Sylvia is a psychologist. She's a founding teacher at Spirit Rock Meditation Center. Chaz, thank you. Come back and join us again.
It'd be my pleasure.
Chaz is a chaplain at University of Pennsylvania. Nancy, thanks so much. She is with the Reconstructionist Rabbinical College. Well, if you want to contact us, we're at voices@whyy.org. I'm at drdangottlieb.com. Next week, we've got a really interesting show about autism in the family. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Al Banks. Elizabeth Perez-Loon is our executive producer of audio content. Mike and Scott is our executive producer. Jennifer Lynn is our producer. She ran everything today. Me? I'm Dan Gottlieb. Enjoy your week, my friends.